across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota. It's another beautiful day up north in a way that it hasn't been this beautiful for some time. Rain, glorious rain. It's been falling steadily since late yesterday afternoon, early evening. And so if you can't hear me as clearly as normally, it's because you're hearing all kinds of cheers and wild applause from every little plant, every little stalk of corn, every little soybean plant that's out there, just digging this. So we'll have our full weatherology forecast coming up in just over an hour. And you'll see why this is so especially welcome, this rain, because it's looking like a hot and dry weekend, or hot and dry week, I should say, coming up. It is 65 degrees up here on Lake Wissota, Wautoma coming in at 62, Hayward 64, Boscobel at 60, and West Bend at 52. All right, here's what's on tap this morning on this federal holiday commemorating Juneteenth. The efforts by Black Americans to overcome generations of racism are being opposed more overtly than any time in recent memory. We will report on how Wisconsin Republicans treated the issue at this weekend's state convention. Also, just minutes away, Sharita Booker will tell us about the most read, most watched stories on the Up North News social media sites. Then in our next hour, child care providers are not letting a middle-of-the-night vote by some Republican legislators stop them from trying to rescue a vital program that also addresses the state's labor shortage. They're joining parents and business leaders in putting pressure on lawmakers to restore the child care count's support that a GOP-controlled committee killed at 2:30 in the morning back on Friday. And we'll actually have two Motherhood Monday segments. We will also have a segment on moms putting pressure on legislators to adopt some basic gun safety protections. So we have a lot of ground to cover yet today. Along the way, your phone calls are welcome at 844-967-2789 if you have a question or comment throughout the course of the show during the day. And you can also send us a note, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. You can also watch us live on video as we stumble our way through our Monday morning festivities here. And you can do that by watching us either at the Up North News Facebook page or Twitter page or YouTube page or the Facebook pages for Civic Media or Bull Falls Radio. And there you can leave a comment underneath and we may see it, like it, put it up on screen for everybody else to see as well. Aaron Zommers joins us now. And Aaron, I haven't looked at the map well enough to know if you guys ended up getting any of the rain or if it was primarily western and northwest Wisconsin that was getting it. What do you got down there?
I think it was mostly north and northwest. We did get a little bit maybe, but it's definitely not raining right now.
Okay. It's we got in a full afternoon of yard work and saw that the rain was coming. I don't know that I've ever worked that quickly with a shovel to, again, dig up more of these, you know, old buckthorn stumps and other weeds and things and get some black dirt put down and some grass seed put in. But somehow we got that all done just in time. And, you know, that it was probably a little bit more physical of Father's Day than other years, but I think it's going to be way more satisfying. I can get in the hammock anytime, but I can watch a nice new plot of green grass grow all summer long. That'll be pretty nice.
Well, there you go.
It's just the ultimate win. People have heard me for almost a year now in this radio show talking about my war on buckthorn, and I have finally emerged victorious, at least, you know, in that part of the yard. Also over the weekend, the Leinenkugel Brewery here in Chippewa Falls, they had their annual summer kickoff. It's also been referred to as the family reunion at the Liney Lodge. And I'm telling you, the bands that were playing there was one called Uncommon Denominator out of Eau Claire. Look, any band with horns, you know, great singer. They were all young. They're all so young. Do you remember the Saturday Night Live skit, Jazz Times 10?
I don't think
probably
I do.
It was a long time ago, but imagine that. But because they looked that young, but they were so good. It was just great to see them. So there were just so many things to do. I'm sure you stayed busy as well.
Yeah, got to spend some good time with my family, especially since last weekend I didn't go to the family reunion. This weekend I did spend some time with almost all the same people.
That's good. No, family's always good. Oh, I've almost forgot. One of our, I don't think Sharita's going to mention this one coming up here, but we put up a social media post. Somebody gave us this suggestion, and we put up the single best brewery is, and then all kinds of, you know, Wisconsin folks, you know, put in, obviously I would have written in, you know, Leinenkugel and all kinds of other things. So you really get a feel for how many different breweries we have now in Wisconsin that people can list that many as their potential favorite.
Just a couple here and there.
Oh yeah. One or two here or there. And it reminds me of one more point that I mentioned last week about Bud Light and Modelo, and how Modelo had overtaken Bud Light because of all the snowflakes that were upset that Bud Light sent some personalized beer cans to a social media influencer who's transgender. I didn't realize till I was reading over the weekend that Grupo Modelo, the Mexican brewer, is owned by Anheuser-Busch InBev, the same parent company of Bud Light. Now, in the U.S., Modelo is sold by a different company, but that's simply because of an antitrust agreement when InBev bought Group Modelo. But the actual brewer, that's Anheuser-Busch InBev, baby. So all you Bud Light haters out there, what did your bigotry really do besides put your inner snowflake on full display? Well, we've got plenty of headlines to review, and we'll do that from the weekend right after this quick break. This is Up North News Radio for a Monday. Paul McCartney had a birthday over the weekend. Aaron, what was it? 81, 82?
81, I believe.
81 for Sir Paul. So a little bit of Paul McCartney and Wings there for you as well. All right, let's look at what was a really good weekend for the Milwaukee Brewers, a wild weekend. You will recall that they limped into the weekend with a six-game losing streak, getting set to take on the Pittsburgh Pirates, who have been jockeying with the Brewers for first place in the National League Central Division. Well, now it's the Pirates who are limping away with a six-game losing streak of their own after being swept by the Brewers in this weekend's three-game series, and the Brewers have retaken the division lead. Sunday's game was especially refreshing because the Brewers have not had a lot of good fortune in the late innings lately, but yesterday saw the crew score four runs in the bottom of the eighth to come back and beat the Pirates 5-2. In fact, because of the Pirates' latest slump, it's the Cincinnati Reds who are now chasing the Brewers, just a half game back in the Central. So the Pirates have moved on. The Arizona Diamondbacks have come to town. Corbin Burns will be pitching tonight. Arizona's in town for games tonight, tomorrow night, and then Wednesday afternoon. And then it's off for a long road trip, 10 games, with stops in Cleveland, New York to play the Mets, and Pittsburgh. That, of course, is all later on after this three-game home series with the Diamondbacks. And remember that if you're in the Richland Center area, you can catch the Brewers on WRCE News from the Center, 107.7 and 1450 AM, and in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 and 1100 AM. And now we're joined by Sharita Booker to talk about those stories that you're clicking on the most on social media over at the Up North News Facebook page, Instagram, and elsewhere. Sharita, hi, how are you?
Good. How are you, Pat?
Good, good. Thanks so much for joining us and for everything you're doing to get all these stories posted. And so now you go back every now and then and see which of these posts did particularly well. What do people really like to read? And in this case, we're going to start with a couple of Wisconsin chefs winning, I guess, what would we call it, the Oscars of the culinary world, the James Beard Awards?
Yep.
The James all right.
Beard Awards. Okay. Itaru Nagano, I hope that I pronounced that right, and Andrew Kroger of Fairchild and Madison won Best Chef Midwest. And they actually opened their restaurant 2 weeks before the COVID pandemic shut it down.
Just terrible timing. And it happened to, we profiled a couple of businesses back then that had just opened their doors and then wondered if they were going to make it or not. We also have in the social media post a link to On Milwaukee, which covers them a bit more. Lori Friedrich, senior food writer, has something and about them. And
It's when I got to find out, I saw that the restaurant was called Fairchild, but I did not know until looking at that, that it is named for Madison's first mayor, Jairus Fairchild.
J-A-I-R-U-S,
Jairus Fairchild. I don't know. Well, now I know. Now I got to go look and find out who this guy is. But
yeah. And when they were first nominated, Christina actually wrote an article for our website about each nominated restaurant and what dish you should order when you go there. And deviled eggs was their can't miss dish. So if you go there, you might want to try those.
All right. Well, there you go. So you can find out more about that by clicking on the story. You see both the chefs featured prominently in a photo that's on the Facebook post. And congratulations again to them. All right. Time for my pop culture confession. As has happened more often than I want to acknowledge, I haven't seen all the things that all the other kids saw. For example, you're going to tell us about actor John Cusack, known best for Say Anything, a movie I haven't seen, but before you judge me, folks, it came out in 1989. We had just had one newborn, and we were about to have another kid. We were very much in a baby phase and never got to go to movies, and this one's just not on my list, but I'll tell you what, Say Anything is on a lot of other people's lists, and so this post about John Cusack making an appearance definitely got some miles.
Yes, so John Cusack is coming to Milwaukee's Pabst Theater in November, November 4th, actually, for a screening of that iconic movie, Say Anything, and it'll be followed by a conversation about his career and a Q&A. And Pat, don't feel bad because I've never seen this movie either, but I have seen that iconic photo of him holding up the boombox.
Yes.
Yes. I was born in 89, so that's my excuse.
you have a better excuse than me. Yep. It says here that the 1989 comedy drama follows the love story of Lloyd Dobler, played by Cusack, and Diane Court, played by actress Ione Skye. And Roger Ebert called it one of the best films of the year and that it was Cusack's ticket to Hollywood. He later went on to star in High Fidelity, Gross Point Blank, and Being John Malkovich. And the tickets to John Cusack's November show look to be on sale now. So we have a link to that that you can click in that post. So I don't care if I say anything other than go look at our post and go buy tickets to that. All right, from indoor movie theaters to outdoor water parks, our third story on highlights that are clicked a lot over on the Up North News social media posts comes from Wisconsin Dells, of course.
Yep, it'll be Waterworld at the Land of Natura. It'll open up this June 17th in Wisconsin Dells. It's actually the largest floating water park in the U.S. with dozens of inflatable attractions, and it's on a lake with 14 million gallons of naturally filtered chlorine-free water. So it sounds like the perfect place to take your kids if you're going to the Dells. I know I usually take my kids to like the resorts or like the Kalahari or something like that, so this will be a nice change of space or change of pace and being outdoors in the sun and enjoying the weather.
Yeah, hopefully they had a good opening weekend there. I know that we were just at Kalahari not too long ago because our grandkids are big fans of that park. And I've always said we should maybe try to expand our horizons and see some of the other attractions out there. So that Waterworld might be checking out maybe once the initial crowds die down. But until then, you know, we got a garden hose in the backyard and it'll just have to make do.
Water All right.
Sharita Booker, thank you so much for letting us know what's hot on the Up North News Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikToks. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk for a bit about Juneteenth. This is the federal holiday. You might still be learning about its roots date back to the end of the Civil War and the end of supported slavery in the United States. Though Wisconsin kids may be hard-pressed to learn more about it if Wisconsin Republicans like Assembly Speaker Robin Voss get their way. Let's go back to the beginning. The holiday's roots start June 17th, 1865, in Galveston, Texas. The Civil War had been over for several weeks, and it had been more than 2 years since President Abraham Lincoln released the Emancipation Proclamation, freeing people from slavery. To no one's surprise, slaveholders weren't big on sharing the news, and it was in Galveston on that day that a group of enslaved people were among the last ones to formally get the news that they were now free men, women, and children. which is not to say that some form of indentured servitude did not continue for generations in some parts of the South, but that what we know as organized slavery in the Confederacy had come to an end. The anniversary has been officially celebrated in Texas and some other states for a while, but it took President Joe Biden to finally make it a federal holiday. That happened in 2021, when Juneteenth became a national moment of celebration and remembrance. Across the country this past weekend, there were events centered on joyful remembrance and others centered more on reflection, because it is, of course, a strange time for reminding Americans of our country's tortured history with race and its, shall we say, staccato pace of progress in addressing racism, providing equity in opportunities, making it increasingly comfortable to encourage inclusion and diversity. All of this going on as, you know, racists and others use the old "I don't see color" reason for attacking efforts to improve diversity, equity, and inclusion, otherwise known as DEI. That's where, in fact, DEI is, you could call it this year's CRT, critical race theory. But let's be clear, CRT and DEI are just the latest ways to use buzzwords to telegraph someone's, shall we say, discomfort with people working to knock down race-based barriers to education, job success, healthcare, fairness in the justice system, and so forth. Other buzzwords in the past included welfare queens, the Southern strategy, and the granddaddy of them all, states' rights. Here's what I mean. Case in point, today is also the anniversary of the U.S. Senate giving final approval to the Civil Rights Act of 1964, but only after it survived a filibuster that ran for 83 days. Now, the Civil Rights Act is here. The law is here, has been for 59 years. But the filibustering, the delays, the excuse, the hostility, they all remain part of the American political fabric. Witness the shamelessness of the most recent utterances by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, even this past weekend at the state Republican Party convention. Voss said this, believe it or not, that diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts in the University of Wisconsin system are, quote, the single most important issue. And he said he was embarrassed to be a University of Wisconsin alumnus because of it. Let's take that in both parts. The single most important issue. Really? An economy and a people still getting over a pandemic, the continuing scourge of opioid use, our young people fleeing the state in droves as Republicans thumb their nose at education, at affordable health care, legalizing marijuana, and don't forget that 2 o'clock in the morning vote last Friday to zero out a program to address the crisis of affordable child care and its role in a labor shortage, all that and more. But for Robin Voss, providing assistance to people of color as they seek an education or a job is, quote, the single most important issue. And for that, he says he is embarrassed to be called a UW alum. He graduated from Whitewater in 1991. Given what we know about the world-renowned University of Wisconsin system and its history of supporting all who seek a higher, more complete, fact-based education, I'm pretty comfortable in saying the embarrassment actually runs deeper in the other direction. Why is Robin Voss wasting so much political capital on this when there are truly more important issues where he could show his ability to work with Governor Evers? Whatever the reason, and we'll leave others to speculate on that, I'm happy to at least note on a somewhat lighter side of things that a quick little meme I drew up over the weekend sure is getting a lot of attraction on social media. It's a photo of a little bunny rabbit But as you know, sometimes small children can be really afraid of animals, no matter how gentle they appear. And in this photo, a little boy is freaking out with fear of this little bunny, crying to an older sister about the cute little animal. I'll tell you what, you turn that into a meme, you put the words Robin Voss on the freaked out crying toddler and the letters DEI on this cute little black bunny rabbit, and folks really relate to how Wisconsin's most powerful Republican needs to put on his big boy pants and go do something productive. We'll be back with more, some breaking news about the Enbridge pipeline up north after this.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Still coming up this morning. See what I did there? Coming up this morning. It's Motherhood Monday. Two topics will be tackled in our second hour. We will talk about the effort to save the Child Care Counts program at 7:15 and gun safety coming up at 7:30. That's all still ahead. We normally have Dr. Kristen Lyerly joining us on Monday mornings about this time. Duty calls, and so we miss her this week, but no doubt we will catch her for Motherhood Monday coming up on Thursday at 7:30. That just means right now on this Monday at 6:34, the phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. If there's anything on your mind, questions or comments about the news, and that includes some breaking news from late Friday dealing with the Enbridge pipeline, line 5 that runs through northern Wisconsin. A federal judge has now given Enbridge 3 years to shut down parts of an oil pipeline that crosses reservation land belonging to the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. It's a major victory for the Bad River, both the tribe and the Bad River itself, as Enbridge has to remove the 70-year-old pipeline from environmentally sensitive areas up there near Ashland. Friday's order from U.S. District Judge William Connolly also orders Enbridge to pay the Bad River Tribe more than $5 million for trespassing, since easements allowing the pipeline expired about 10 years ago. The tribe has argued that an emergency exists because large sections of nearby riverbank have washed away recently, leaving less than 15 feet of land between Line 5 and the Bad River as it meanders across the reservation. Experts and environmental advocates have warned in court that exposed pipelines would be weakened and could rupture at any time, causing massive oil spills. A lot of folks remember a spill happening with an Enbridge line in Michigan a few years ago. Enbridge is seeking permits to reroute the pipeline, a 40-mile route that would go around the reservation, though it would still threaten sensitive areas if it were to rupture, but would no longer be on sovereign Bad River land. Line 5 is, you know, nothing to sneeze at. This thing carries 23 million gallons of oil and liquid natural gas every day. 23 million gallons worth. It runs for 645 miles from Superior, across northern Wisconsin and Michigan, all the way down to southern Ontario. The company says that it will appeal, of course, so we'll have to continue following court developments in this case. But it is rather noteworthy that after years of legal wrangling and back and forth, that that Judge Connolly, late on Friday, did say it is his determination, after hearing all the evidence, that the pipeline running through the Bad River has to shut down. We talked about why Assembly Speaker Robin Voss wants to focus so much attention on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and attacking UW system funding for that. And the other head scratcher of canceling, or rejecting rather, a major expansion for the College of Engineering at the UW-Madison campus. And what is it about the Republicans, who also, of course, killed the Child Care Counts program late last week? I mean, what is their issue to address the worker shortage in Wisconsin? And it's not like they can keep relying on the the Tim Michaels trope about, well, there's just so many lazy people sitting on the couch. No. On Friday, the latest Wisconsin jobs figure came out. Guess. Guess Wisconsin's current unemployment rate. It's 2.4%. That's the lowest rate ever measured. And it goes along with President Biden being able to crow about the lowest national unemployment rate in more than 50 years. And let's be clear, this isn't a bunch of people still sitting on their couches. Labor force participation is up. Another 14,000 people entered the Wisconsin workforce in May. And that participation rate would be even higher if it weren't for all the parents who've had to leave their jobs and stay home, not because they're lazy, but because we have a crisis in Wisconsin over affordable, quality daycare. Governor Evers and Democrats found a solution over the past couple of years, thanks to President Biden's American Rescue Plan. All Wisconsin Republicans had to do to get even more Wisconsinites back into the labor force is use a fraction of that record $7 billion surplus to keep supporting the people who care for our kids. Those childcare workers who don't want to continue working for poverty wages. What do we get instead? Well, as mentioned, we got the middle of the night vote late last week to kill the program. And at this weekend's state Republican convention, one of the party's leading bloggers puts this up for a tweet. Listen to this. Liberals are freaking out that Republicans don't want to spend millions to fund a program handing checks to daycare centers during the pandemic. Guess what? The pandemic is over. Time to stand on your own. Time to stand on your own? Do we get to say that to the oil companies now? Do we get to say that to people who make more on capital gains through the stock market than they do through working at a job? Time to stand on your own. That's their message to childcare workers, childcare center operators, and working moms and dads. I mean, the utter cluelessness and the inability to relate to average Wisconsin families all tells you why Republican numbers have gone so poorly in the last few elections, and that they're only surviving right now. Not because of their ideas. We haven't seen any ideas for addressing the worker shortage or the daycare crisis. They're only surviving because of rigged maps and billionaires who occasionally run race-based political ads to save people like Ron Johnson. So the numbers don't lie. They can't use that old chestnut, nobody wants to work. We know who doesn't want to work. We know which legislators stayed home for 9 months last year and got paid to do nothing, and stayed home for 9 months 2 years earlier and got paid to do nothing. I mean, technically, they're not part of the only 2.4% still unemployed in Wisconsin, but they sure as hell don't actually work. Instead, they're attacking the UW system. And now, in a story published this morning by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Kelly Meyerhofer, it appears that they're going after Wisconsin's technical colleges as well. Because according to Kelly Meyerhofer's story that was published in the past hour, technical colleges in the state would lose their taxing authority and have to rely on politicians in the state legislature under a bill that was approved during a legislative committee late last week. This bill was introduced, amended, and passed along party lines by the Assembly Committee on Ways and Means without public testimony. They're sneaking the bill through. It now heads to the full assembly for a vote that is scheduled to happen the day after tomorrow. A massive change for the Wisconsin Technical College system by amending a bill that was going to pass through earlier without public testimony. Under this bill, technical colleges wouldn't lose their funding, not right now, but the state would have more control of the purse strings because right now, colleges, technical colleges have taxing authority, but under this bill, they would only retain their taxing authority for building projects and would lose their ability to go to referendum for operating costs, the thing that we're seeing technical colleges and school districts have to do all the time. Beginning for the 23-24 school year, tech colleges would receive state aid equal to the amount they received through their tax levy the year before, plus any changes in property value. But as you can imagine, Democrats were quick to pounce on this. State Assembly Rep. Sue Conley of Janesville, the ranking minority member of that Ways and Means Committee, said there's nothing in the language that would protect the technical colleges from future cuts. She said, anytime you take away the authority, it makes you wonder, what is the end game? Which you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know. It's that the politicians in the legislature don't want to leave it up to taxpayers. They don't want to leave it up to you and me. They don't trust their constituents to determine the value of the technical college. You know, the people training people for the workforce that Republicans claim so much to care about. Wisconsin, according to the story here, was the first state to establish a system of technical colleges. The original legislation in 1911 provided state funding and requires every community of 5,000 people or more to establish a local board with taxing authority. And of course, as Technical College System President Morna Foy would say in a statement for the Journal Sentinel story, losing that form of local control, quote, would reduce our accountability and responsiveness to our local community and our employer partners. For example, if a big company or a new industry were to move into the area, the local college board can respond by changing to the changing workforce needs by adding programs and hiring more faculty. But they would not be able to do that. They would not be able to be as nimble if their taxing authority were taken away and they had to go to the legislature and say, Mother, may I? We have this big company that says they want to come to our mid-sized town here in central Wisconsin or up north. We need more funding to do that. Is there trust that the legislature would be equally nimble and respond to that request? Well, no. Look what they just did to the flagship campus of the university system for the College of Engineering. The Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee said, screw that. If people really want to go get an engineering degree, they can go to Purdue, they can go to Michigan, they can go to any other of our Big Ten competitors across the Midwest. We have no interest in helping you because we control you. We control these purse strings and we just don't like you. Who thinks that that won't happen to the technical college system as well? Now, it's hard to see that this bill would go anyplace if it actually does pass the assembly on Wednesday, if it actually does pass the Senate and gets to the desk of Governor Tony Evers. I say it's hard to say, simply I'm couching what you have to think would be an instant veto. And again, it's not even clear the Senate will take it up. There have been plenty of instances where one house passes a bill, and this one may get to the Senate, and some Senate Republicans may be meeting in caucus. And I've been in those caucus rooms. We've sometimes received bills from the other house, and we go, what is this? We're not passing this. And they sit on it, and it doesn't pass. And that's fine. But the point being that if this is what is actually proposed by Republicans in the legislature, after their already abysmal track record of supporting helping the workforce and of supporting working parents who need affordable childcare to get into the workforce, I don't see the measure as anything other than a very unfortunate advertisement for what the current Republican Party in Wisconsin, seen in the legislature, has become. We'll have our Monday history lesson and music break next. You're up north.
Coming up!
All right, you don't need me to tell you yet again what a Carole King fan I am, so I'll just simply note that on this day in 1971, Tapestry, her landmark album, hit number one in the U.S. It would stay number one for 15 consecutive weeks. Also on today's little history calendar, the first Father's Day was celebrated in Spokane, Washington, this day in 1910. You're all familiar with NASCAR. When it first organized, the first official NASCAR race was held this day in 1960 at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. On this day in 1978, the first nationally syndicated strip for Garfield. It had been published locally in 1976, but on this day in 78, it went nationwide. In related news, I hate Mondays, and I suddenly have a hankering for lasagna. The Four Tops had the number one song this day in 1965. Now, interestingly, of course, the Four Tops tune knocked off another Motown song, The Supremes' Back in My Arms Again, to take the number one spot this day in 1965, and both Motown hits were, of course, written and produced by the legendary songwriting team of Holland Dozier Holland. Let's see, a couple of birthdays. We already noted that yesterday was Paul McCartney's 81st birthday. Ann Wilson, who forms Heart with her sister Nancy, was born this day in 1950, which makes her 73 years old today. Paula Abdul is 61. Born in 1962 in Los Angeles, California, and actress Zoe Saldana has a birthday as well today. She is, do the math here, Pat, 35, 40, wait a minute, 1978. Is that right? That would make Zoe Saldana 45. That can't
be. I have no idea.
No. We're actually going to do this one in real time. Because that's...
No, that's correct. She's 45. She
45?
Was born this day in 1978.
No way. Wow. Would not have guessed that one. And I'm... Okay, well, there. Kind of speechless on that one. All right. Here's another birthday boy, rapper Macklemore, born this day in 1983. So he's the big 4-0. That's the way we like to drive. Doing donuts, all the neighbors know us. Yeah, we outside. Look alive. The freaks of the city, they come this out. This song is called No Bad Days. It's from his new album, Ben, because his birth name is Ben Haggerty, born in Seattle, Washington, 40 years ago today. And one more number one song, and this would be the first of five chart toppers from Katy Perry's Teenage Dream album from 2010. California Girls was number one today. So it says here that in the Teenage Dream album, five number one songs, a feat equaled only by Michael Jackson's Bad. I have to admit, I'd kind of want to go through and double check that between just Thriller and a bunch of other albums. Maybe that was the first time. I don't know. Let's look at that. I trust my sources, but I'd kind of want to double check it anyway. So we'll look into that.
We'll have to take a
later.
Look. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. You know, sometimes the night before you're just kind of saying, well, okay, here's what this says. It's on the internet, so it must be true, right? But no, that's not always the case at all. I wanted to say just a little bit more about the Republican proposal to change the way that taxing is done by the Wisconsin Technical College system. again, because Kelly Meyerhofer does such a thorough job in this article that just came out in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And let me say again, because I try to say it with some regularity, that I am proud to be a paid subscriber for good local and national news, you know, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the Wisconsin State Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and that you should be as well. You know, reporters don't do these things for free, though sometimes it definitely feels like it, but do be a paid subscriber of the news sources that are important to you. But Kelly quotes a recent report by the nonpartisan think tank Wisconsin Policy Forum that notes Wisconsin technical colleges right now are well-funded, ranking fifth in the nation among two-year systems. And I said a few minutes ago, this bill appears to want to take our very good tech college system and do what they've done to the UW system, which is heavily reliant on state money, frequently finds itself the target of political battles. I said that tech college system is ranked fifth nationally. The UW system is ranked 43rd nationally among four-year systems. The article quotes Michael Rosen, a retired former state technical college system board member, as saying, "We've seen what they've done with the UW system, which is essentially bleed it dry. If tech colleges become entirely reliant on state funding, you'll end up with a gutted out technical college system." And the irony is the people proposing this are the same people supposedly concerned about the state labor shortage. And I would say supposedly concerned based on the record that we've seen here so far. And so in this hour, we've learned that there's a true lack of Wisconsin sense by the Wisconsin legislature in that people are going to be putting pressure on them before this state budget is done to restore a program that helps working parents afford and find affordable childcare, not adopt something that would gut the way the Wisconsin technical college system is funded in this state. As we're going to hear in the next hour, legislators need to hear from you about gun safety measures that are out there, just have to be brought up for a vote, because some of those proposals have 70 to 90% public support. They just need a little bit more, shall we say, influence from their own constituents. All this and more still to come before this session is done. And then once it's done, a lot of those lawmakers, you know, may not see the Capitol building again for months, still continue to get paid. But most of the work gets done either in the budget or in the Assembly and Senate floor sessions here in the spring. And that's where they could really use some help hearing from you, because what they're thinking about right now isn't helping your labor shortage or your childcare crisis. They're focused on who's going to run against Tammy Baldwin. They're thinking just about elections, winning elections. And that's what they talked about a lot in La Crosse this past weekend at the 2024 state convention. Congressman Tom Tiffany spoke. He is widely rumored to be considering a run against Tammy Baldwin, as is Madison businessman Eric Hovde and Milwaukee area businessman Scott Mayer. And so there was a lot to talk about elections. And of course, Robin Voss saying at the convention, he's ashamed to be a UW alum because of all the work against racial inequities. So your legislators, don't let them be strangers. They would really like to hear what you really think. Or in our next hour, you're up north.